When Parliament resumes next month, pricing carbon won't be the only issue on the agenda. The Senate is also due to discuss a bill banning cluster bombs. Cluster bombs are canister-like munitions that split open in mid-air to scatter hundreds of smaller explosives over a wide area. There's a growing international consensus that they're not morally acceptable weapons. Firstly, because they can't adequately discriminate between military and civilian targets, and secondly, because not all the deadly bomblets explode on impact. Instead, like landmines, they hang around in the landscape to pose a long-term threat to health and safety. Australia has signed the Convention on Cluster Munitions, and the bill currently before Parliament would give that treaty legal teeth by banning the use, development and stockpiling of cluster bombs. However, a group of prominent Australians say the bill is seriously flawed because of a loophole which allows the Australian military to work alongside allies who haven't signed the convention, in particular the United States. Retired General Peter Gratian was the chief of the Australian Defence Force between 1987 and 1993, and he's one of the signatories to a letter urging the government to amend the bill. General Peter Gratian, welcome to the National Interest.
Yeah, thank you, Peter.
Firstly, what's wrong with cluster bombs in your view?
You've covered most of the points. They're an area weapon. They're non-discriminatory, so it's a blunt weapon. But the principal problem is that the bomblets are armed when they leave the canister, and not all of them explode when they hit the ground. And those that don't explode are primed and ready to go and need only the smallest movement, usually to set them off. And they persist for many years. For example, the cluster munitions that were used during the Vietnam War are still causing civilian casualties. Most of the casualties are children. And our general judgment is that the military utility of cluster munitions in no way offsets the humanitarian effects that continue for many, many years. And we believe, for that reason, that they have to be banned.
I worked in Vietnam some time ago, in the mid-1990s, and during that time I often travelled to Laos. And while I was there, I did several stories on the effect of cluster bombs left over from the Vietnam War in Laos. And indeed, in some cases, the bombs look like playthings.
That's not intentional. They're not usually, not that I know of, designed to look like playthings. But to a child, or someone just inadvertently working in the field, they could well not be recognised for the very lethal things they are. Incidentally, they tend to cause more deaths than injuries, more so than ordinary anti-personnel mines.
What is the strategic argument or the military argument for them?
Well, they're a useful weapon in some circumstances, and it's pretty easy to think of scenarios where you get an immediate tactical advantage from the use of cluster bombs. I'm talking about things like having a cluster bomb strike in front of an advancing enemy. It's useful for denying an area that may be unoccupied at the moment and you don't want the enemy to occupy. It's useful for denying him the use of an area such as a logistic area. These are all reasonable results from the tactical use of the weapon. But from what we're speaking about a moment ago, the deleterious effects, the follow-on effects that persist for so many years, in no way, in my view, balance this tactical usefulness. Yes, they have a tactical usefulness, but the other effects far outweigh that.
So you don't see Australia as putting itself at a disadvantage militarily by banning cluster bombs and signing up to the treaty?
No, I don't. I mean, the first point to make there is that we don't have cluster bombs. We looked at developing them in the 70s with the Coringa weapon, but we didn't. We've never had them and we haven't used them. And so to sign up to a treaty saying we don't intend to use them, we'll get them in the future, in that sense doesn't put us at a disadvantage. There are, however, arguments which have been strongly put that our principal military ally, the United States, our interoperability with the United States is pretty important. And so this is another factor that comes into play. And the problems I have with the bill that's before the Parliament is not the banning of cluster bombs, and that really is not what's in contention. What is in contention is the wording of some of the legislation before the Parliament, which fairly clearly is put in there to make it easier for the United States or us to continue to operate with the United States and to facilitate the United States continuing to use these weapons.
Well, let's look at that aspect of the bill in particular. This bill has a rather unwieldy title. It's the Criminal Code Amendment Cluster Munitions Prohibition Bill 2010. And as you say, the key debate about this, the key concern about this legislation from your point of view and the other signatories to the letter you signed, is that it will enable Australia to go on working alongside the United States. But isn't that something, I mean, if we support the US alliance, if Australia is part of a US alliance, isn't that an inevitable part of any bill like this?
Yes, perhaps I didn't put that clearly. Of course it is, and we're engaged in a war at the moment in Afghanistan, operating with the United States. So it's important that there be a provision in the legislation for us to continue to be interoperable with the United States. But what our concern is that the wording used in our legislation goes well beyond that and, in fact, doesn't follow a couple of the key things that the convention is about, namely striving to end for all time the use of these cluster weapons and persuading non-signatory states like the United States to become signatories. And they're the sort of worries that we have with the wording.
I think one critic, I think from a Harvard legal critic, put it this way, that Australia could be loading and aiming the gun, but just not pulling the trigger under the way these amendments are worded.
Yeah, I think that puts it very well.
And would it be possible to do it differently? I mean, are other US allies doing this differently?
Well, there's still a fair bit of discussion about it. Principal allies like the United Kingdom and Canada considering how they're going to do it, and they obviously are looking very closely at what we do here. Other allies like New Zealand have already passed their enabling legislation, and they haven't made the provisions that our draft legislation is making, which will facilitate or will go beyond what we think we need to be interoperable with the Americans.
So in your view, it is feasible to have a much stronger bill, to much stronger legislation, and still have joint operations with the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. In the original convention that was signed in Oslo in 2008, there is one of the articles, 21, was put in after a lot of argument and discussion specifically for that purpose, because you've got to have something in there that will allow alliance partners like us in the United States, or what they were particularly looking at was NATO, to allow the forces of signatory nations like us to continue to operate with their alliance partners. And if you didn't have that clause in there, then we couldn't sign the convention. But it is in there, and our concern is that our draft legislation goes beyond that and it misses a couple of the important points. In fact, it goes further than it need.
Well, in fact, your letter argues that the loophole, if you like, or the flaw in the bill is so large that the US could also stockpile cluster bombs on Australian soil and use its military to transport cluster bombs through Australia, which seems to breach the spirit of the treaty.
There are two principal concerns. One we've already spoken about is this interoperability concern, and the second is the in our bill, Article 7242, and this deals with exempting American armed forces people or people working with them from certain actions in Australia connected with the bill. And the way it's written, it very clearly would enable the United States to stockpile cluster bombs in Australia, and it would enable them to transit cluster bombs through Australia either by ship or by plane. And both of those things are contradictory to the spirit of the convention. And we think they're unnecessary and shouldn't be in there. I think I heard one of my successors as CDF Air Chief Marshal Houston a week or so ago said that, oh, yes, but they're very unlikely that they'd ever want to do that. Well, I would hope it is very unlikely, but if it is unlikely and we don't want them to do it, then the provision shouldn't be in our legislation.
Well, what are the attitudes of of serving military officers to this bill? I mean, is the government acting on the advice of the armed forces in going down this route, do you think?
Opinions are mixed. On one side, there are those who see the tactical advantages of using these weapons, who are very concerned where they are continuing to be interoperable with the Americans, and that tends to make them want legislation to be loose. But there are others who are concerned with the thrust of what we, Australia, the course we started off in 2008, which is to get rid of these weapons for all time, and concerned that the way we're drafting the legislation now sends a couple of messages. One, that we weren't all that serious initially, and we're more concerned with our relations with the United States. And secondly, the example that may set to other countries around the world watching what we do.
Particularly, as you say, other allies of the US like Canada and the UK.
Yes, particularly, yeah.
And are these weapons, I mean, is this a hypothetical issue, or is Australia currently involved in military operations with the United States where cluster bombs are used, for example, in Afghanistan?
Yeah, the answer is yes.
And so if the bill were changed in the way you'd like to see and made stronger, what would that mean for Australia's operations with the US in Afghanistan?
Well, I don't believe there'd be any significant effect at all. And the original convention, as I said a moment ago, was drafted with this in mind, to allow people like us to continue operating with their allies. What it does mean is that Australians who may be, using a current word, embedded in American headquarters or involved in planning, would not be able to participate in planning for the use of the cluster bomb. Similarly, Australian forces could not call for American support using cluster bombs. But this is not a war-winning or war-losing thing at all. There are alternative weapons to achieve the same effect that cluster bombs do. Normal artillery, airstrikes not using cluster bombs, just using normal weapons that detonate on impact. There are alternatives available. So I don't believe the effect on Australian operation, for example, in Afghanistan, would be anything more than minimal.
So it wouldn't
and
put it...
And certainly doesn't it outweigh the humanitarian effects of these weapons.
So it wouldn't put Australian soldiers at risk, for example?
No, I don't believe it would.
And my reading of the treaty is, in fact, that Australia would have to go a step further than that, that we would be saying to the US, you shouldn't be using these weapons, you too should sign this convention.
Yes. In the original convention, I think it's Article 21, that requires us specifically to do that, not only not to use them and do it ourselves, but to try and persuade non-party states, we're talking about the United States here, that they should accede to the convention, and in any case, to persuade them to discontinue the use of cluster munition. When we signed up to the convention, they were two of the things we undertook to do.
The Senate Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Legislation Committee has approved this bill. They've said it doesn't need to be changed. So do you hold up much hope now that there will be any amendments made, or do you think the bill is likely to pass in its current form?
I think the bill is likely to pass, but one of the reasons I was glad to speak to you today is that I hope that the strength of these arguments, that it needs some improvement, will carry the day. And when the Senate comes to consider it, I would hope very much that the Senate think long and hard about these arguments and leading to some amendment of the bill. I don't think this would weaken the bill from Australia's point of view at all, and I certainly don't think it would endanger the lives of Australian soldiers, not a bit of it.
General Gratian, thank you for joining me in the National Interest.
Thank you, Peter.
General Peter Gratian, who was Chief of the Australian Defence Force from 1987 to 1993, the culmination of a long military career. We did invite the Attorney-General as the responsible minister to respond to his concerns, but the Attorney-General was not available. On the National Interest website, you'll find a link to the open letter signed by General Gratian and a bevy of other prominent Australians. And of course, we'd welcome your thoughts on this issue. Click the Add Your Comment link on our website at abc.net.au/rn/national interest, or leave a message on our feedback line by calling 1300 936 222.